Welcome back to Pod in the Tyne Match Day, and the Premier League is back, and what an occasion to kick us off. Liverpool at St James's Park, the return of Isak, an untested and inexperienced Newcastle, two new managers, and of course, a chance to pay tribute to the club legend Kevin Keegan. Hold on tight, it's going to be emotional.
Okay, I'm going to start with a small anecdote. I was in the Millburn for that match in a ticket. The press box was very, very full, oversubscribed. So I did the noble thing, Chris, and I took myself out of it and sat in my seat. Very enjoyable. And I'm going to paint a picture
for you. Did you have some pints?
No, didn't have any pints. I'm going to paint a picture for you, but with words. There was a fella not too far away from me. He had grey hair, he was wearing a black hoodie, and in the moments before kickoff, when the whole stadium was singing Walking in a Keegan Wonderland, this man stood in front of me. He was choking on the words of that song, and he was weeping quietly. It was a kind of beautiful moment. I had tears in my eyes too. 5 minutes later, about 5 minutes, the same fella in the grey hair and with the black hoodie. I can't use the word that he was using, but it's
wasn't the only person who used it.
No, it's commonly referred to in the English language as the C word, and he was belting that word out at the top of his voice, occasionally interspersing it with the word rat. And I mean, it wasn't poetic. You can't describe it as poetic, but it was sort of, okay, this is football. And it was a very interesting intersection between, I've written down, legend and legacy. And you just sort of thought, yeah, okay, football's back. What a start to the season that was. So I have to start by saying huge props to War Flags for that incredible display, and also to a young Newcastle team who acquitted themselves really well. And, you know, bloody hell, bloody Liverpool, bloody penalties. I can't believe that's happened at the end of a match again. But let's talk overall impressions about a pretty enormously interesting and draining game of football.
Yeah, draining, I think, is a good way of putting today in so many ways, for so many reasons. As you mentioned, the pre-match displays and tributes, which I thought were brilliantly handled by both clubs and impeccably observed by everyone within the stadium. Everyone united in those moments. Yes, there was beforehand when the teams were warming up, that Isak was getting booed at that stage, and then continuously throughout the match. But that was put to one side when it was the brilliant remembering of someone who was means so much to both clubs, particularly to Newcastle United for his three spells. Yeah, the club once as a player and twice as a manager. And then beyond drain, I'd say chaotic and intriguing would be other words I'd snatch at, because it didn't feel like either side ever had any sort of control of that match. Clearly there are obvious shortcomings in both teams as well, and I think that's what actually made it so compelling in so many ways, because both sides are lacking in certain areas. And that allowed the opposition, depending on which way you're looking at it, to have their moments. But given what many people feared might happen coming at this game, and I don't want to seem like I'm smart before the event, but I had said a 2-2 draw going into it to a couple of people. I don't know why I felt that. And I don't know if I really thought it deep in my heart of hearts, because I didn't know where two goals were going to come from Newcastle. But actually, despite the XG and all the other figures, I think you could say that Newcastle maybe left one or two goals out on the field there.
Let's start right at the end, and let's hear from Matthias Jeisler, who talked afterwards about his pride in the players playing so well in their first competitive match altogether.
It was indeed a game with mixed feelings, especially in the end when you get a decision, took 2 points away. It's hard, it's really hard to digest. But overall, there's also a lot of confidence, and somehow we are really proud of what we saw throughout the 90 minutes. The young lads were doing an amazing job with all the challenges in that transition period. I'm not tired of mentioning that, because this was special. That was already delivering on a high level, and that makes us proud. It was already a lot what we want to see. Therefore, what I said, we are really proud in that short amount of time to see lads as a unit on a pitch, really committed to what they're doing, and this is a really good base to build on.
It's interesting there you talk about your feelings pre-match, because I do want to just mention that a little bit. I have to say, I was the opposite. I really feared the worst. I've been doing something strange the last few days. I was at Arsenal on the opening day of the season. I was at Hull Man United on Saturday, and obviously this game today, and then I'm going down to do Fulham Chelsea. I'm doing that for a piece for the Athletic. So I'd already had that sort of first day of the season feeling, and I just felt really nervous. You know, you'd done a story earlier this today, Dan Burnout with an ankle injury. So Newcastle have just lost their newly minted captain. They've lost a huge amount of experience, no Joelinton too. And by the way, afterwards, Yeisler says that it should just be a couple of weeks for Dan, so that's good. I did see him afterwards. He isn't a moon boot, he is hobbling. So we'll see. And then I saw the team, and you see Sean Sturr and Lewis Miley in midfield, both tremendous players. We've talked a lot about Sturr and him being a prospect, and I have to be honest, I was like really, really nervous and thought that Newcastle might just get overrun, and I'm so delighted to be proven wrong about that, because as first impressions go, that was hugely encouraging overall.
It was, and I think beyond just the inexperience, I think there was a fear, I held it at least, that maybe Newcastle looked a bit lightweight as well, particularly in the middle. This isn't just in hindsight, I did say it before the game. In some ways, that Liverpool side was probably not the worst team to play in that regard, because they're not the most physically imposing team. Isak and Wirtz are more technical players, albeit Isak obviously has a physical capacity and running behind can be effective. And so in that regard, it maybe suited Newcastle a little bit more. And I was worried about the sort of lack of leadership that was perhaps there. But other players did step up. Malik Chow was wearing the armband, but Jan Wissler, we'll come on to, was excellent in everything that he did. Botman, having had a worrying pre-season, I thought was very good. Lewis Hall, very good. And Amar Dedic, who's been on Tyneside for less than a week, or basically a week, came in. And clearly it was beneficial to him that he knew Yeisler and the way Yeisler wanted to play. But, and I didn't expect, of all the things, I didn't expect Matthias Yeisler to start speaking French, but he did say chapeau to Dedic afterwards as well, which I realise is a widely used phrase from cycling and the like, but basically to say for him to be able to come in and perform the way that he did, his Premier League debut, the way that he handled himself, among others, with all of the challenges, as you mentioned there, I thought Newcastle really did stand up, and maybe that desire to prove people wrong really did serve them well.
Yeah, I'm going to be a little bit self-referential here, because I was very moved at the start. One thing the War Flags did, obviously everybody in the stadium was holding up something, and my view was blocked because of it, because I was also holding up a white piece of card. But I was very proud and moved, because in the Gallagher end, there was a Keegan quote, which is, "I want people to dream about their football club. They should. We should all be dreamers at heart. Some people are the opposite and say we can't do that. But when you ask them why, they can't give a reason. Will I say, why not?" And that was taken from an interview I did with KK back in his second spell as manager, before it all badly unravelled, of course. But that sort of sentiment, I mean, it's a great life lesson, and it's a great great lesson to me, that sort of feeling of, oh, things, you know, this is Newcastle, things will go wrong, and feeling that again before the match. And then, of course, afterwards, you feel like, okay, things aren't going to be so bad after all, or they don't necessarily have to be. Anyway, I love that, seeing those words, and I just love that, you know, I love that sort of feeling. We should all be dreamers at heart. You know, like, this summer has been very tumultuous for lots of reasons, and we get bogged down in financial stuff and, you know, UEFA compliance and SCR and all of that thing. But that message of, you know, that message of sort of hope, of positivity, we should all be dreamers at heart. It's just beautiful.
It is, but I also get the why people, or if people were going into this game with trepidation or concern, or at least unsure about what to expect, I also think there is a realism that you have to apply to that, and I agree with the overall sentiment. But this summer has been destabilised in so many ways, and as you've put it before, touchstones have gone, and that team did look very different, and a lot of the players who stood up were the players who last season did not stand up or were not there to be relied upon, and that was what was so encouraging about it.
That's Chris Wolf there, mood shitter. Yes, no, you're totally right. And of course, if we're on that subject, we should talk about Anthony Elanga and Newcastle's blistering start. Chris Wolf, for the first time this season, may I please say, describe Newcastle United's goal.
So the build-up to Newcastle's goal was actually alarming, and this is what I meant about the deficiencies in the two teams, because Gravenberch sort of ghosts through Newcastle's non-existent midfield to the edge of the Newcastle box, and there were gaping holes, certainly in that first half in Newcastle's midfield, and it was worrying. So he gets to the edge of the box, and you think, oh, this looks really dangerous. And then he proceeds to just pass the ball to nobody, thankfully. Dedic intercepts with a really good tackle, which the ball ends up with Willasula, who picks it up midway inside his own half, advances forward through the middle, and Anthony Elanga, who is miles behind Milos Kerkez, just sprints at a speed which it is staggering. If you watch it back, the ground that he covers and how far ahead he ends up beyond Kerkez, gets into the box, and reminiscent of a year ago, debut away at Aston Villa, 3 minutes in, played through, sliding doors moment we've mentioned before, he doesn't score, he doesn't take that opportunity. This time, calmly across Alisson into the far corner, 5 minutes in, Newcastle have the absolute ideal start to Yaisler's Premier League debut.
Yes, very, very nice moment, very good moment, as you say. A torrid first season for him, by and large. That was his first goal for the club, wasn't it?
First Premier League goal, yeah.
First Premier League.
33 appearances for Newcastle, yeah. 40 in all competitions.
And it raises an interesting question. And it's not that, you know, this isn't, it's not that we haven't talked about this before, but when do you evaluate a transfer window? And 12 months later, perhaps, you know, we may start to have a different view of, you know, of what happened last summer.
Although, and this is not to be, well, it is to just be my usual poor and negative on it, there was also a club record signing who literally didn't get on the pitch.
No, absolutely, absolutely. While we're sticking to the positives, because it's the same subject, we do also have to talk about Johan Wisse. Newcastle United have got a player there. Discuss.
Yes, and strangely, to DR Congo's benefit, Johan Wisse was fit come the end of the season and actually was at his fittest point when he got to the World Cup with DR Congo and had some encouraging moments there. Scored and assisted while he was there, played in this slightly deeper role, so he started the match as a number 10 off Willasula. He'd played there a couple of times in pre-season. He'd also played striker position, scored twice in Valencia, and has looked physically capable of really positively affecting matches, which is not what we saw last year. He looked like a passenger at times, he looked off the pace, whereas now he looks physically strong. He had competed in more duels and won more duels than he has done except in one match in his entire Premier League career, which actually came against Newcastle for Brentford, but against Liverpool in this match, I think it was 11 that he won. He competed in for 18 duels. He was everywhere. It was his ability to carry up field, bringing people into play, showing a sort of playmaker role I didn't quite think he necessarily had. That's why I worried about him playing as number 10. And whereas there was chaos happening around him, it was almost like when he got the ball, he was able to slow down or speed it up depending on when it was required. His role in the second Newcastle goal, if you're going to let me go on and explain
of
that.
Of course.
One. So Newcastle have just conceded Cody Gakpo's equaliser. Again, another concerning moment where the Newcastle defence just retreat, and eventually Gakpo shoots from the right-hand side of the box. Liverpool have equalised. There's then about a 60-second period where Liverpool look like every time they're around the Newcastle's box, look like they're going to cause problems. Joe Willock has literally just come on the pitch, and Wissa picks the ball up about maybe halfway inside his own half, drives forward 40, 50 yards, goes between two Liverpool players, dribbles it really well, controls it really well, and then has the ability to then compose himself, play the ball to his left. Joe Willock takes a really good touch inside and then whips a finish into the far corner, and Newcastle restore the lead only at Liverpool level for less than 2 minutes. And that was sort of Wissa's key involvement. And it's the way he materially affected the game. He only started one of the last 22 matches under Eddie Howe, and suddenly here he is affecting matches. He had two big opportunities, one of which was Lewis Hall flashing the ball across the box, which he didn't quite connect with. Another one where Willock played him in behind from a Dedic quick throw, where he was then played in the right-hand side of the box and shot straight at Alisson. He could have taken those two chances, and the Isla even referenced it, albeit with a smile and sort of joking fashion, but saying he could have killed the game, is how he put it. So the finishing, hopefully, is still to come. There is still stuff to work on. But generally, an outstanding performance, definitely man of the match, and definitely Newcastle's star player on the day.
I went into the mix zone afterwards with a couple of other journalists and spoke to Johan Wissa, not only about his performance today, but about his tough first season at the club and about how the World Cup really restored his faith in himself. So have a bit of a listen to that.
It's been very, very tough, honestly, if I need to be honest with you, physically, mentally. I think to get through this, it's only the World Cup who really helped me to change my mood and trust myself, trust my body. So that's why now I had a good preseason. And so yeah, the last 3 months have been amazing for me. So that's why today I'm very happy to be here.
Can I just ask what it was like at that moment towards the end where you come off and the whole stadium is on its feet, and when the whole stadium is on its feet and cheering you, celebrating you?
It's amazing. It's amazing. You know, I wanted to be here. You know, I wanted to enjoy this moment, full of moment. And today I just enjoyed the 94 minute I played. Since the first minute until the last minute. And lucky we had we conceded a penalty at the end, because I wanted to cheer with the club, with the fans, because we deserve to win today. But I can only say thank you to the fans today, and thank you for my teammate, because it's been unbelievable today.
Did you have to fight for your Newcastle future, do you think, after last season?
No, of course it's not easy when you play football and you're not feeling well. But the club always backed me, you know. I spoke with even Eddie Howe before he left, and the board. Everyone backed me, you know. So that's why I said they wanted me to do great. And today I just needed to give back something. But yes, that's the beginning of the season. We play against Liverpool. But yeah, now is the we have so much to work on now, and it's a good thing to show today that we are all ready.
I'm not trying to be sort of clever after the event here, but something that I sort of said a few times last season was that the signing of Wissa still made sense to me if Newcastle got the player that they thought they got. In other words, the player that had been at Brentford the season before, who was known for his reliability, his availability, and for his regular goal scoring. That player, even at the age of 29-30, could be an asset, somebody that the other players could learn from. That signing still made much more sense to me than the Nick Voltimada signing, which stylistically just didn't seem to fit ever. And obviously we saw last season Eddie Howe's attempts to kind of try and find a place for him. But Wissa can be a proper asset for the team, for the club, can't he, like playing like that?
He can, and whether that's as a number 10 as he started at, although Newcastle are looking for one in the market, try to do Christopher Nkunku, who's going to RB Leipzig, they're still looking in that position, but also then as a centre-forward, and clearly stylistically he fits more than what Yaisler wants than Nick Voldemort. So there was a strange moment. I thought Asula for the first 20 minutes was really effective. Newcastle kept... You saw with the Isla ball, it was to try and get the ball in behind quickly, particularly against a high line like Liverpool's. you'd have the fullbacks or the centre midfielders get the ball very quickly, play the balls in behind to Elanga. There was a wonderful crossfield ball at one stage from Miley to send Elanga in behind on the right, or to send Asula in behind. There's one time where Asula got in and Alisson just managed to block a shot when he'd got in behind Xhaka in the defence. But Asula then had a sort of coming together and for large spells in the first half. It was weird. When he was sprinting, he looked to be able to sprint, but not really be able to run around much.
He was limping.
Yeah, he was limping generally, but the faster he went, the less it was seen to be affecting. But anyway, Newcastle sort of lost a little something there. He came across and got painkillers at one stage. I then assumed at half-time he was going to come off. He didn't. He stayed on until it was when I mentioned that Willock came on, like the 56th minute. But rather than turn to Nick Voldemort, the club record signing who's on the bench, to come on at any stage and play up front, either during that first half or even at that point, instead, Wissa went up front, Joe Willock came on, and Joe Willock, who could leave the club in the next week and a half, Besiktas are among the clubs who are interested in him. He's in the final year of his contract. Yeisler did say afterwards, he did actually say, no, if he plays like this, I suggest he'd like to keep him. Yeah. And I do get that because I thought he was encouraging in pre-season as well. And in a team which lack legs really in midfield, and by legs, I mean the ability to carry the ball upfield, I think he could offer something. Nick Voldemort didn't come on the pitch. And I thought that was telling that you've actually got an injury to one of your strikers and you still haven't turned to him. And I think it's because certainly maybe that was the game plan for Liverpool. Maybe the game plan for other games will be different. But for this match and to play in that way, there is no place for Voldemort, seemingly.
Yeah, yeah. On Asula, Yeisler said afterwards, hopefully it's not that serious. He'll be back as soon as possible as well. For now, it looks quite good. When he was asked about whether these sort of injuries, niggles, would force the club into the market, you know, particularly as there isn't a kind of out-and-out centre-forward like Asula, he said, that's right, I thought about it. We will see 7 days left approximately, i.e. in the window.
It was an interesting thing that he said about that because I wasn't so much on board with the idea when people were trying to say that he was really trying to put pressure on after the friendlies when he was talking about the market. But that very much felt like because now if Newcastle don't make an attempt to sign a striker over the course of the last week of the window, then people are going to talk about the fact that Yeisler suggested afterwards and whether he meant specifically a striker. But he was asked about Asula. Now, they are looking for an attacker, but specifically a striker wasn't necessarily something I'd heard of up to this point. So
I wonder if Newcastle should put in a cheeky bid for one of Liverpool's players, Alexander Isak. I mean,
did he play today?
I don't know. I'd offer like 20, 30 million maybe.
Was he on the team sheet? I didn't know.
I mean, it was. I mean, it was a startlingly poor performance. I mean, I was there for when the Liverpool bus arrived because I wanted to see and hear what that sounded and looked like. And of course,
were you like leading the choir?
I was doing the conducting, and it was just it was people just shouting rat at the top of their voices. He came off the bus, he was wearing headphones, kept his head down, you know, obviously trying to do that, you know, kind of a very cool thing. We know he's a cool customer, and I think He sort of took, I mean, every touch was booed and jeered, as always is the case of this. I mean, it was very, very visceral. But he did, and you know that he's that kind of cool customer anyway, even in a fiery, passionate atmosphere or playing for a fiery, passionate team. But he was pretty non-existent, wasn't he?
He was, and I mean, there seemed to have stylistic issues with him at Liverpool. I was interested, I was chatting to James Pearce, Athletics, Liverpool correspondent, and he was saying that he's been, so far, he'd been given the grace of the fact he had a lot of injuries last season. Pre-season, he apparently looked quite encouraging, because whereas last year he was just completely disconnected, they found that encouraging, but that performance, generally, he just did not look involved at all. He wasn't a terribly, but the second half, he had a couple of opportunities which he really snatched at, didn't look at all that cool customer we came to expect at Newcastle in front of goal. And so, yeah, I think there was a sort of poetic justice there. Because during the game itself, you kept on thinking, I don't want to, like, I was contributing to the Athletics Live blog, and I just didn't want to touch on the Isak subject, because I knew for a fact if I said, oh yeah, Isak's really struggling here, then he would go and get a goal. But that just didn't happen, and I think Newcastle did very well to sort of stifle that and just prevent any service of any note into him. And then he didn't even take the penalty either, which was a big moment as well.
That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I had that feeling. It's like, if you were him, would you want to take that penalty? And maybe not, because you're sort of heaping so much onto your shoulders and to an already sort of, you know, pretty. But then I also thought, if you're Shearer, you just take it, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like you just take it. So it was interesting. Okay, well, you've mentioned it. We have kind of dotted around subjects here, but in terms of chronology, you've mentioned the penalty. I mean, it comes right at the end. What was
the clock minute? Has ticked into the night to the 6th minute of added time. There's five minutes of added time, but Newcastle had made a substitution, so it just ticked into the 6th minute of added time.
People around me, admittedly, it was at the other end of the pitch, but people around me were kind of adamant that it wasn't a penalty. So, and you'll have to be my eyes on this one, because I haven't seen it back.
Well, there are other people as well there's a big debate going on, I think, from a lot of the pundits out there, and Matthias Jäisler did not think it was a penalty either. He described it as soft, and if you give that, then you have to give a lot of fouls across the pitch. I mean, I thought there was some odd refereeing today. There was one stage where every single challenge became a yellow card, one stage in the first half, but I think it's hard to... If you flip this one, and if this is a Newcastle player going into the box and Kerkez fouls him or comes into him like that, I think you scream penalty. And I think, again, it's probably one where VAR maybe wouldn't have got involved if the penalty hadn't been given on the field. But when it's given on the field, there is contact. Yes, you can argue, where can Hall really go? But Munoz is advancing into the box, and then him and Hall have come together, and Hall's momentum or Munoz's momentum, the coming together of the momentum colliding has led to him going down. And I thought it was a penalty. When I first saw it at the time, I thought it was a penalty. The more I see it, I certainly don't think it's an absolute shocker of a decision to be given. It was just one of those unfortunate moments. Hall looked devastated afterwards. He had his head in his hands after the game. There's no criticism of him. I thought he was very good for large spells today. But it's Newcastle and Liverpool again. Four times, the last four matches between the two at St James's, there's been a goal after the 90th minute. Only once for Newcastle in a positive sense. I think Fabian Schär scored a few years ago, but obviously last year Ngamura to win it for Liverpool, and it's points dropped. It feels harsh to talk about it, but Newcastle dropped 27 points from winning positions in the Premier League last season. It's 29 since it's two this season, but 29 since the start of last season. Only Wolfsburg in Europe's top five leagues with 33 have dropped more than Newcastle across Europe's top five.
If they've done it twice in the same game, does it count as 4 points?
No.
Okay.
No, it does not. But yeah, so that there's that, which is a concern. I mean, Liverpool again. Newcastle haven't beaten Liverpool in the Premier League since December 2015. Can you remember who was manager?
December when?
2015.
Steve McLaren.
Steve McLaren, indeed. So he didn't have many victories in Newcastle head coach, but one of them was against Liverpool when Wijnaldum scored. But so Newcastle's Premier League record against Liverpool is shocking. It's 20 games without a victory now against them. And just so frustrating that regard, because I thought Liverpool were poor. Yes, you can look at the XG stats and their XG is higher, but I just thought that it was Liverpool's side who were there for the taking. And that's not me trying to diminish what Newcastle achieved. I just thought that in some ways they became the perfect opposition for Newcastle, because they allowed the game to be chaotic, and they do not look a side who are yet fully accustomed to what Iraola wants from it. But I was compare two head coaches having just arrived. And by that, Jäisler's only been there 3 weeks. Iraola's been there since the start of the summer. It looked like Newcastle and Newcastle's players have got to grips quicker with what Jäisler wants than maybe Liverpool's players have adjusted to what is expected from Iraola.
I totally agree with that. I sort of looked at Liverpool and sort of didn't really know what the big idea there was. So you take huge encouragement from that performance, I think. You also feel frustration because they've twice taken the lead. They're at home. Yes, they're playing against a team that has been very good over recent seasons. Obviously, not so much last season. But it's a psychological boost, whilst at the same time being 2 points lost and therefore disappointing. So it's that kind of interesting mixture. But I'm taking encouragement from it. And while we're talking about encouragement and positivity, you've talked about Dedic. At the start of the pod, there were other three debutants to come onto the pitch, I believe. The other two starters were Sean Sturr and also Hornacek in goal.
Who made a very good save of the first half, a very important save.
With Bamba coming on. So what did you make of the new boys overall?
I thought that the save from Hornacek in the first half from Wirtz was very good. He was unsighted and given maybe questions of his shot stopping so far. I thought that was an important moment for him. And generally, I thought he looked all right, decent with his feet. So hopefully encouraging from him. Sturr again, yeah, to step up in that environment. I mean, there were a couple of moments. There was one moment where he passed the ball directly out of play when he had it in his own half. But generally, an 18-year-old who's shouting at his teammates, commanding the field, demanding possession, leadership and a Premier League in his Premier League debut, I thought that was encouraging. Then yeah, Bamba came on and offered a bit of calmness. I thought he played simply, was offering himself as a passing option deep, and so yeah, encouraging for all of them in those moments to have come on, and all young lads in different degrees of how young they are, but all of them never played in the Premier League before, and yeah, a positive introduction hopefully for them. And then a player who it certainly wasn't his Premier League debut, but a lot has been expected of him, and he only played 45 minutes in pre-season, but I thought Lewis Miley for the most part was brilliant in midfield. Being said that he's going to step up this season, he's had to. Newcastle lose Joe Linton, they haven't signed the midfielder that they want yet. Nico Gonzalez still ongoing there as to whether Newcastle can get him for Man City, and Lewis Miley just so composed and brilliant at points. I thought he was really, really good.
Alrighty, anything else before we wrap this one up?
Just that on the touchline, I think we saw what we expected we were going to see from Matthias Jäixler, and that every single decision was he was in the fourth official's ear, or he was in the linesman's ear and shouting and bawling and questioning. And then he had Iraola on the other touch, who's just, he never stops.
The way we'd built it up with Jäixler, though, I kind of half expected him to run on the pitch and drop kick the referee after that penalty was awarded. It's sort of disappointing we didn't see that.
Yeah, although Easter didn't get himself banned for that reason.
True.
But I just want to finish by saying it's good that you were also waving a white flag before the game, because usually you just do that in a sort of metaphorical sense, but at least we now physically found a way that you're waving a white flag.
What do you mean I do that? And then what do I do?
Well, just it's just the way you treat life, really.
You're saying I'm a coward?
Well, just more sort of...
Where's Matthias Jäixler? I've got his name wrong again. Can we have some drop kicks in here, please? Why are you just calling me a coward out of nowhere?
Well, that's just sometimes you've got to face facts.
Right. Well, you know, when I started that story, you started this pod with the story about the fella in the Millburn stand with the grey hair and the black hoodie who cried and then called Alexander Isak a certain name.
Yeah, George Collins.
Okay, that's the end of a big game, a big day, and a very encouraging start to the season for Newcastle. And it's a big week for us too at Pod on the Tyne. Our Extra Tyne subscribers are going to get a Chris Woff special around the Newcastle United Academy. You've spoken to lots of people at the Academy about what that will look like in this brave new era of Newcastle 2.0, and you're also going to their first match, so really excited about that. Newcastle are back in action on Wednesday evening at home to West Brom in the Carabao Cup, a competition that has brought them huge success over the past few seasons. We will be recording our normal midweek show after that, so we'll bring you reaction to that. And we're also taking part in a Newcastle United podcast All-Stars show with Alan Shearer on Thursday night. So look forward to seeing you some of you there at Gosford Civic Theatre. On that subject, we still have a few tickets left for our Pod on the Tyne show coming up in October. So please check out the Gosford Civic Theatre website for that, and then you're going to Tottenham Hotspur on Saturday evening.
I am, yes, and hopefully Sandro Tonali is as ineffective as Alexander Isak was.
They had a great start to the season, didn't they?
Yeah, that was quite funny.
Yeah, very funny. Yeah. All right, thank you very much indeed for listening. Goodbye.
So, an opening day point for Newcastle, as nerve shredding and stressful as ever. thank you for listening to this Pod on the Tyne Matchday episode. Thank you to George and Chris on the ground. We'll be back soon with our main weekly show, which is also now available on YouTube as well. Head to podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm to subscribe and get ad-free listening and additional content. From everyone at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Goodbye.